All right. So I'm going to be talking about the challenges to wastewater aquaculture and looking at catfish raised in Africa. So we have me. I am currently a postdoc with the USDA ARS. This is some work that I did as part of my PhD dissertation. I looked at the emerging contaminants, and Mark Yeboah Ajapon also looked at traditional contaminants as part of his graduate work. So if you see the long list of authors, it's not because we're going to publish in Nature or Science. It was just that we had two big committees come together to make this happen. So the problem of water contamination has been with us for a very long time. I'm sure before some of us were born. So if you read the slide, it says, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water of the Nile and it will be changing to blood. The fish in the Nile will die and the river will stink. The Egyptians will not be able to drink its water. Okay, this happened a long time ago. And what do we have now? In the 2000s, we still have challenges with water quality. Well, we have predictions of population increase, and wherever the human population is increasing, we have livestock, right, increasing as well. So in 2050, it's speculated that we would have the numbers vary. So just think of it, we have a very big number of people and livestock living on the earth. I don't want to commit to any specific number given the statistics that are all over the place. But then what is apparent is that we will need more resources. And some say that we will need 3 Fs to sustain the human and livestock population by 2050. And of course, water is needed. Okay, so right now we have 92% of water that is sufficiently available to meet our demands. However, what is going to happen in 2050? We will have about 58% of the water that is sufficient to sustain us. So what happens if we do not have, enough clean water? Do we stop taking baths? No, maybe we may need to recycle the water that we have. However, there are challenges with wastewater. It has potential human and environmental risk if not properly managed, according to the WHO. Also, about 80% of ill health, especially in developing countries, are water-related, according to the WHO. So we went to a developing country, Ghana, which is where I'm from, and we looked at wastewater stabilization ponds, as well as reference ponds and raised fish in them to see how the fish were going to do. And this is how the ponds look like. So we have our influence coming in. And then we have the screening chamber. I don't know how many people are familiar with wastewater treatment, but this is less, this is not the conventional one that we are using in the United States. In Ghana, we have solar energy, so we use that to break down our waste. And also, we have the microbes, right, in the anaerobic and the facultative ponds that also do take out some of the waste, and the fish is grown in the maturation pond. So after the fish are old enough, the water recirculates in the maturation pond, it goes out into the stream. How we cultured the fish was that we had 8-gram fingerlings of catfish in a tank, and they were there for about 18 weeks. After 18 weeks, they were old enough, they were 64 grams in body weight, that we could transfer them into the maturation pond. So we didn't actually take little baby fish and just tuck them in there. We had to make them grow a little bit so they could survive to maturity. So I'll speak about the traditional contaminants, and we investigated the suitability of this fish for human consumption. So what did we do? We looked at the physicochemical water quality parameters, temperature, dissolved oxygen, pH, nitrite, COD, BOD. We looked at excreta-related pathogens. We looked such as fecal coliforms, E. coli, salmonella, and helminths over. We also looked at heavy metal concentration. Those are the heavy metals we looked at. And then we also looked at the weight gain, the survival rate, and the condition factor, just to see how well the fish are doing. So what was found? We found out that the temperature and pH were within acceptable guidelines for Ghana and the United States. But then dissolved oxygen nitrites, COD and BOD were not. And I guess that is accepted for wastewater. These are the numbers that you can, these are the numbers that we got for those who are inclined to look at the numbers to make sure we're speaking the truth. It's uploaded online, so you can look at it later too. Excuse me. So the pathogens, fecal coliforms, and the Salmonella and the E. coli, the loads were statistically insignificant, looking at both the wastewater and then the reference water, which is groundwater and rain-fed. We found no helmet over, which is great news, in any of the analyzed samples. The pathogens that we found were on the fish skin and the gut, but not in the fish muscles. I'll talk more about that later. So how about the heavy metals? The all the concentrations in water were within, again, US EPA and the FAO limit, except iron and cadmium. All the concentrations in sediments were below the lowest element level, except iron. All concentration in fish tissue were within WHO and US EPA limits, again, except iron, in gill and liver. And these are the numbers, these are what the numbers looked like. So looking at the growth, you can see obviously that those that grew up in the control, which was the rain-fed and the groundwater-fed ponds, did a lot better than the those that were raised in the wastewater ponds after 24 weeks of being in the wastewater ponds. So what are the conclusions? We found that, well, in the order of decreasing concentrations, the pathogens and the heavy metals were like from sediment, they were heavy, a lot more in the sediment than the water or than the fish. And the higher levels of pathogens were found on the skin and in the gut, but not in the muscle. Iron concentration in fish liver and gill were above acceptable limits. So what do we say to that? You have to adopt the hazard analysis and critical control point guidelines to make sure that you protect the consumers from potential health risk. So now let's look at emerging contaminants. 21st century pollutants. We have them called emerging contaminants because right now we have the capability to kind of analyze these contaminants in the environment. We are talking about parts per billion and parts per trillion. So now we have mass spectrometers that would measure to those levels when previously we didn't have those before. And that is why we are calling them emerging, because now we can see them. And you ask whether there were problems before. Well, right now we are using more chemicals than we ever, pharmaceuticals than we used ever. So of course they are a problem now. And what are these emerging contaminants? A large group of them that is receiving a lot of attention are called endocrine disrupting compounds. And the formal definition, I'm sorry, is that it's an exogenous chemical or substance that alters the function of the endocrine system. The endocrine system is the system in your body, a group of hormones, secreting glands, and tissues that modulate homeostasis, growth, reproduction, and all the stuff. So if your endocrine system is being messed up with, you're in big problem. And the problem with endocrine disrupting compounds, or EDC for short, is that they can be passed on through the to progeny. So if a parent animal had a problem with interference with EDC, it's likely that their offspring is going to have a problem too. And this is some of the things that we have been seeing that has been later the footstep of these endocrine disrupting compounds. Intersex vitellogenin in male fish. Vitellogenin is an egg precursor. It tells the female that it is ready to produce eggs. So obviously it has no business in the male fish. Also decreased fertility, developmental defects, and growth of tumors have been attributed to endocrine disrupting compounds. Over here, this is a normal male roach testis, and this is a feminized. You can see eggs in the testis. So the compounds that I looked at were estrogens, and this is just to show you what they look like. I looked at three estrogens. Now, these estrone and 17 beta estradiol are natural hormones that are produced by mammals, including us as human beings. And the 17 alpha ethinyl estradiol is the main active ingredient in birth control pills. The solubility is very low, and you ask why it's a problem. Well, it's a problem because even at those low concentrations, they are very potent. And of course, they are they have low vapor pressure, which means that you cannot just walk around and breathe them in. They are not aerosols. And here, as I mentioned earlier, it's secreted by mammals. So both males and females excrete estrogens. So it's not a female-only problem, right? Chances are that if you're a male, you're excreting more estrogens than your grandma. And so it's really not just females who are the problems. And in the U.S., conventional wastewater treatment is not able to get rid of these estrogens, although they occur at very low concentrations. So we see these numbers here, and they have been determined to be relevant in fish growth because they are able to cause undesirable effects in fish at these levels. So this work has been published in the Science of the Total Environment, if you'd like to read more about it. What we did was, so we went to these maturation ponds that I described earlier and collected our fish, and we anesthetized the fish according to the IACUC protocols because we are not allowed to make the fish suffer in the name of research. And after they were anesthetized, we bled them, and then we put them to sleep again using the anesthesia and took out the fish tissue for analysis. We did histopathology, and then we looked at body indices just to tell us the general conditions, physiological conditions of the fish. So what did we find? We found out that in the wastewater ponds, the estrogens were higher in the wastewater ponds than in the reference pond. RP means reference pond. This is a wastewater stabilization pond, and this is in order of treatment. This wastewater pond is less treated than the waste stabilization pond. Now, what I'd like you to look at closely here is the estrogenicity. Estrogenicity is like in the blood, what is the total estrogen concentrations in the water or in the blood? And over here, we see that in the reference pond, we have very low concentrations. We might call these background concentrations that are occurring. Maybe, who knows, there's runoff from surrounding agricultural fields. And in the wastewater ponds, they are higher. So the estrogenicity in the wastewater ponds were higher than in the reference pond. And for your information, the predicted no effect concentrations of these estrogens were exceeded in the ponds that we looked at. Now, looking at the fish serum, what was the estrogenicity in the fish serum? The female in the reference ponds can clearly be distinguished from their male counterparts looking at the estrogen concentrations, right? So the red is the female and the blue is the male. But then when you look at the wastewater ponds, you see that you can't really tell which fish is male or female just by looking at the estrogenicity. So then that tells us that there's something in the like androgens that is interfering with the male fish as well, which should also be looked at. And histopathology, as I mentioned before, we looked at the tissues under slice to see whether we would find any intersex in the testes, for instance. So after looking at, these are some of the examples of the tissue types that we looked at. We found out that there were no apparent signs of endocrine disruption in the catfish or gonad tissues, but then the least treated wastewater pond female fish had the lowest gonad and liver scores. So in conclusion, the biological matrices suggest that aquaculture reuse of adequately treated municipal wastewater will have minimal estrogenic effect on African catfish, estrogenic. But then we also have to look at androgens as well. So what are we saying? That direct discharge, if you don't recycle the wastewater, what are you going to do? You're going to discharge it, right, in the streams. It has impact, and so does reuse without precautionary measures. So with this, I'd like to thank all the funding agencies that helped make this work possible. The international logistics were not easy to arrange, but with funding and support from all these organizations, we're able to do that, and we are grateful for them. Thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Okay. Questions?
Yes, please, John.
Do you think that the slower growth rate that was associated with the wastewater treated fish was related to advanced maturation, or was it just there were so many things that were taking place with the fish health and it all added up to the slower growth rate?
I'll say that we have this issue with ammonia too in the wastewater ponds. So it could be that maybe we might have to grow the fish, like you said, longer to see if they were going to catch up or not. By the way, there was a lot going on. Yeah. Yes, please. No. I wouldn't call it an emerging technology now. 5 or 10 years ago it would have been, but right now I would say that to analyze one sample of water will cost you like, just to do the extraction of the estrogen will cost you like $20. Then we are talking about going to look at it under the mass spectrometer. Some labs will charge you like $300 per sample. Yeah, but how we minimize our cost was that the graduate student, which was me, did a lot of the extractions. We did the extractions in the lab, and then we had a collaborator with in the USDA who had the mass spectrometers who analyzed the estrogens for us. So if you're interested, I'll say that you can collaborate with research institutions and universities to make it possible because people are still studying them and you could easily give them data stuff too. Yeah.
No more questions? Great. Then we'll conclude this session and I hope you all have a good day and we'll see some of you tomorrow, I'm sure.